Can you explain something for me?
I'll try.
What is an old friend?
Well, it's someone you know for a very long time.
and Eric Steven tweets about baseball nomenclature.
Okay. Yeah, so welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm sure we'll talk about an old friend or two on this episode. I'm Eric Steven, along with Jacob Birch, who is an old friend in the sense that
was an old friend.
You in a weird way, like if you were like, because you used to live in the Los Angeles area, now you're in Kansas City.
Traded so
you're
to like, the Royals. Yeah.
Yeah. You're kind of an old friend, although it's not the same. So but I admit my old friend, categorizing is weird and it's off kilter. And it seems crazy at times. And Josh Lindblom, who himself is an old friend, called it an obsession, I believe. He's closer to right than, you know, he probably thought. But it's essentially it's recognizing old Dodgers. I believe it originated. It all comes from Vince Scully, who used to call, you know, ex-Dodgers old friends, you know, in his sort of very nice way of, you know, presenting things. And I believe Bob Timmerman mentioned it quite a bit on the old Dodger Thoughts days, and it just became sort of a thing I ran with, and it's kind of taken on a new life of its own. But so the general rules, I do have sort of rules, although they're a little bit wishy-washy as you get to the edges. But the general rule is someone who has been on the 40 man at any time, or someone who has been with the Dodgers that I covered with during their time with the Dodgers. So that's basically like dating back to like 2012, maybe a little bit in 2011, 2010. So like Mark Lowe is someone like this. He's a non-roster guy. Didn't make the team. He made it to the final week a couple years ago. Mike Adams last year would be one. Chad Godin, same deal. Never occupied space on the 40 man, but they were non-roster guys I covered. The other sort of where I sort of use executive privilege, if it's like someone, I think I referred to Wesley Wright as an old friend, even though he technically never counted because he was never on the Dodgers 40 man. They did lose him in a Rule 5 draft. It was one of those like that over the years, like there was like so much consternation at the time that they lost Wesley Wright, which was kind of absurd if you think about it. But there's just been so many guys like who are covered like over and over again, like either in the comments section or just, you know, on the internet in general, that I feel like I've had so much discussion about them. They're technically an old friend, like Carlos Santana, never on the Dodgers 40 man, but obviously one of the more controversial trades, I would say, in the last like decade. Might be the most controversial trade since Piazza, if you think about it, from the Dodgers standpoint. He was technically never on the 40 man, so he's not an old friend. But he is an old friend, like because of this sort of addendum I've imposed, but he wouldn't qualify under normal rules. But so that's essentially it. It's a wide net meant to sort of recognize people that he made some sort of impact, at least when they were on the Dodgers, and also recognizing some that barely made a ripple. But
the Andrew Haney clause.
Yeah. So the Haney thing was weird in itself, because his deal. So he was acquired on a day where the Dodgers made a bazillion trades. But I mean, from a practical standpoint, it was a three-team deal between the Angels and the Marlins. But the way it was presented and officially went through was as a two separate trades, one with the Dodgers and the Marlins, one with the Dodgers and the Angels. So technically, Andrew Haney was a Dodger for the briefest of moments. Whereas like the July 30th trade, trying to think, no one actually went. I can't remember if anyone went for the other way, but so the July 30th trade with the Braves and Marlins, that was a three-team trade. The Todd Frazier trade was a three-team trade. But in that case, like no one came to the Dodgers and then was traded. So I guess under that circumstance, like if that was like a two-team deal, Todd Frazier could have qualified for old friend status, because the Dodgers would have sent the three prospects to Cincinnati to get him. And then they would have sent Todd Frazier to the White Sox to get the three prospects they got. But in that case, it was one three-team deal, so Todd Frazier technically doesn't count as an old friend. But also, in fairness, Andrew Haney, because the way the news broke on the day of the winter meetings when that happened, he sent out a tweet saying, it was great. My time in the Dodger organization was great, even though it was only a couple hours. I forget exactly what it said. So but it was really funny. Yeah. So he got extra credit for that.
I have a question.
Yes.
Let's say it was a three-team trade. Like, we eventually found out it was a three-team trade, but the news followed the same way. Haney still makes those tweets. Do you still call him an old friend?
No.
No?
No, I'll stick to the technicality on that one. He did make the tweets, so...
That's a contribution to the Dodgers organization.
It would have been tough, but... He wouldn't have got old friend status if it was technically a three-team deal. The other one is who almost counted was the trade with the Padres. That was holding up the Dodgers trading for Jimmy Rollins, because one of the guys that went to Philadelphia was Zach Eflin, who came from the Padres. And then that trade, the trade of the Padres, was finalized one day. I think it was the 18th. And then they waited overnight to finalize the Phillies deal, which was the 19th. But so Zach Eflin was not on the 40-man. But had he been like a 40-man player, he would have qualified for old friend status because he spent a night as a Dodger. But that he didn't count because of that. So
someone who pitched a little more than 57 innings as a Dodger, certainly an old friend.
Who would that be? I don't even know.
I don't know. Yeah. The Dodgers signed Joe Blanton to a $4 million contract over 1 year. I think we all kind of had the same reaction to this, and that thought of his years or half a year starting with the Dodgers, which was less than ideal, kind of got confused by it. And then remember that he pitched in relief fairly effectively last year. So do you have any thoughts immediately on the trade?
Sure. I was a surprise. I mean, I didn't see this coming at all. I know we talked last week about, Dodgers were still going to be active before the forced spring training. And I guessed they would make at least five additions to the 40-man roster, and you said four. And so I knew they were going to probably add someone, like a reliever. Like Tyler Clippard's name has been mentioned, not necessarily by anyone linking them to the Dodgers, but specifically, but someone like that ilk. And then, so this one came as a little bit of a surprise. The initial reaction is, huh, Joe Blanton, that's weird. And then, you kind of look and you're like, oh, okay, it's not that far fetched of a deal. After the Dodgers, he went to the Angels 2013. He was basically terrible, pitched mostly as a starter that year. But the times he wasn't a starter wasn't because they wanted to use him in relief. It was more like they banished him to the bullpen. He had an ERA over six in 130-something innings. So, that's really hard to do. He started went back to the A's on a minor league deal in 2014, and he pitched like two games for Salt Lake in AAA, and then he retired. So basically, he was literally out of baseball. Decided to make a comeback last year, signed a minor league deal with the Royals, sort of rejuvenated his career a little bit. He made four spot starts, I want to say, in May. I don't have it in front of me, but mostly was pitching out of the bullpen. The Royals, as you know, had probably one of the greatest bullpens in the majors. And very deep, and around July or so, they sort of didn't have room for Blanton, so they designated him for assignment. He ends up in Pittsburgh, and he just was kind of dynamite down the stretch. Like, Pittsburgh made a couple additions last year that were like you don't really think about. They basically added J.A. Happ and Joe Blanton, and they basically got like Greg Maddux and Mariano Rivera out of those two guys. I mean, not exactly, but it was about as close to that as you could imagine. But Blanton put up really good numbers as a reliever. obviously small sample size, but you know, something like that happens, you take notice, and you know, it's a $4 million deal. I know where it's funny to sort of say this as we say, it's okay that the Dodgers, you know, may have balked on spending for an extra year of Zach Greinke, and all these little things kind of add up, but $4 million is really not that much. They're not sort of, he's not an anchor in the bullpen that's going to, like, they're not going to be forced to keep him around if he's not performing. But I think he's someone who could contribute, and especially he was hard against righties. So, you know, in theory, it's something that could really work for them. And I think it'll help out.
And you know, it's a slow news week when that is the news story of the week.
It was
arbitration week last week. The Dodgers settled again with everybody, as they have been the last few years. Any of the numbers, the settlement numbers, kind of jump out to you?
No, I'm not really. Like I know, like, MLB trade rumors predicted a little bit over $11 million for Jansen. I think I had 11.1. Although I probably shouldn't have looked more at the MLB trade rumors picks for my. I think it's not like mine was any like scientific sort of process. I did look at some comps and tried to sort of maneuver it that way. But yeah, I think I was sort of biased in that I was also playing against the MLB trade rumor predictions. So I ended up probably closer to those than I should have been. But so he signed for like $10.65 million, Jansen. So a little less than that. I would have liked to see them try to sign him to a longer term deal. I wrote about that a couple weeks ago. He doesn't have the mileage on his arm as most closers do at this stage of their career. You know, if you're going to invest in a reliever, he's like the great combination of like youth, low mileage on the arm, and performance, that you would sort of feel comfortable doing that. Obviously they still could, but, for now they got this out of the way, the 1 year deal. So, it didn't strike me as super low, but you know, they're pretty much everything was in line with what everyone kind of thought going in. So it's just nice to sort of get that out of the way, I guess.
And that, any other news stories that you want to cover? I know you wanted to mention the minor league coaches getting announced.
Oh yeah, so we were kind of waiting on that. They announced the managers like right before Christmas. They're, you know, all six new managers, not new to the organization, just sort of new in their spots for 2016. A couple of the guys are new, but the one I thought was sort of interesting, well, a couple of names. Termell Sledge, who just started back into coaching or getting into coaching last year, is coaching with the Dodgers. I want to say, oh man, do I have it in front of me? I think he's hitting coach in Double A. The other thing was Sean Larkin, who's manager at Ogden. He's a newcomer to the organization. He was with the Indians for a few years. He's not only the manager at the rookie league level, he's also the what the Dodgers are calling, what is it? It is like coordinator of skills development, which I thought was an interesting title. And it's basically like, you know, help, like their season doesn't start till June. So he'll move around a little bit before then, be in Arizona, just sort of reinforcing sort of the program. I think this sort of change offseason was sort of getting everyone aligned, I think, with the same philosophy. And I think that's what they're kind of building toward going forward. Bill Hasselman, the guy who stayed in the organization, he was in Class A last year, and they won the California League title with the Quakes. He's managing AAA now. John Shoemaker, who's been a coach with the Dodgers since 1981, he was in Ogden last year. He's back with the Arizona League this year. So he's been just about every level. So it's interesting. We've got a lot of young guys and a lot of experienced guys as well. But I think they sort of, this was their, not that it was the same sort of tactics, but this was sort of the Michael Corleone baptism scene in Godfather 2, where he's basically, the Dodgers sort of consolidated, like they made all their minor league moves. And I think they're trying to sort of get in line with the, you know, with the same philosophy. And then as I made that reference, I just realized you're not a Godfather guy, right?
I mean, I've seen one and two. I'm excited not to watch three. I don't watch them, you know, religiously every year, but I liked them. I like them.
Yeah. But that's kind of it.
Yeah. You and I were joking before we started recording that January is the cruelest month for baseball fans. It was really, because November and December, you kind of got the peak of the off season. February, you are in the same month as spring training, and January, you got these sort of middling free agent deals, maybe a big trade, but for the most part, not a lot to talk about. But that's why we have listeners who send us wonderful questions.
That's right.
You want me to just start throwing them at you?
Sure.
Bay of Puigs, which will still make me laugh, asks, is Sierra as big a risk as unnamed NL officials claim? Heard his upside is Raisel Iglesias, which is pretty good. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's still a risk. I mean, he was pretty terrible last year in Cuba. So, I mean, he had a 6.10 ERA. Obviously, it's a reliever's innings. He pitched decently before. He was wild, though. Had a lot of wild pitches, hit by pitches, and walks. And they say he streamlined his delivery, which is probably a huge improvement, you know, to that. And it's a matter of can he keep doing it going forward. Honestly, the $30 million is probably it's a risk, but it's one of those, like, if he pans out as a starter and contributes kind of anything at the major league level, it'll be worth it. I think they probably overpaid a little bit, but he's certainly a risk for sure. I don't know. I still don't really know what to make of him. And we'll see. They still haven't officially announced his signing yet. So we'll wait and see. But I imagine he's someone who's going to probably start, I would guess, in Double A. And we'll see, you know, we'll see what they get from him. He could be, you know, someone who's like a pleasant surprise, but I wouldn't expect much out of him from this year, even though he just signed a 6-year deal.
Mud Diggler on Twitter asks, odds Ethier gets traded?
Odds. So I'm assuming this means before spring training. It could mean during spring training. I guess I still think it's kind of low.
When do his 5-10 get locked in? Is it in late April?
I don't have it in front of me. I think it's like April 21st, something like that. I think he's like 19 days shy. So whatever day that is, I think it's the 21st.
Just to elaborate, that's when he will have been a 10-year veteran with 5 years with the same team and gets an automatic no trade clause.
Yeah, that allows him to approve, like, or to refuse any sort of assignment to another team. So if they trade him, he can say nope. But that's one of those things, like, if the situation got to the point where they wanted him out of there, it's I don't think they would have much of a problem trading him, because I think it would get to a point where the situation would be bad enough here that he would probably want to go somewhere else. So yeah, sure, it's an impediment, but I don't think it's like it would kill any sort of trade talk if that came about. But I would put the odds of them trading him pretty low, like in the, like, say 17.39% is my guess right now. I think you know, if they found a good opportunity, they would, but it's just a matter of, like, you know, who are they really replacing him with at this point? And I guess it always depends on what you get back. And are they not going to just do it for salary dump because he was a productive player last year? Crawford is a different story, I think. But Ethier, I think, proved to be, you know, productive enough to want to keep around unless they get, you know, they get like something they truly wanted in return.
How Devin Norris asked, how has Alex Wood's stock fell so far? He was a young, promising upside pitcher just a year ago. And I think this depends. Has his stock actually fallen that much? It certainly has in the eye of a lot of Dodger fans, but I'm unconvinced it has in the eyes of the front office.
Yeah, I think they're still pretty high on him. It's just he's at the point of his career where he is a guy with options, and, like, he really has been in the majors for a while, like without being sent down for a significant amount of time. So he's you don't think of him as someone necessarily who can go up and down in the minors, but relatively, like, he's a part of the rotation for me, because, you know, with Hyunjin Ryu, sort of uncertainty when he's going to return. But once Ryu's back, Wood's probably the odd man out. Just, I mean, just based on, like, seniority, I mean, he could obviously pitch his weight and keep his spot in the rotation. But I think he's sort of that – he's probably right now either the first guy up or the second – or one of the first two guys up. It probably starts a year in AAA. But, yeah, I think part of it is his – he hasn't quite his numbers last year. His strikeout rate was way down. Didn't put up the numbers he had in previous years. So that's probably what some of the concern is. But I still think he's a cost controlled starter who at worst is like probably a little below average. But there's still upside there. So I don't, like you said, I don't think they're necessarily down on him. It's just they built a lot of depth around him and still have the opportunity to keep him for quite a long time, and he just might be the odd man out, you know, once the season starts. So if everyone's healthy, that's a good thing, you know, not necessarily for Alex Wood, but for the Dodgers, because it means a lot more people are healthy and ready to be productive.
Yu-Yu Siegel asks, what favorite Queen song for your walk-up song? I'm going to modify this. If you had to have a walk-up song, what would it be?
Oh, I'll go Queen first.
And then Queen. And it could be both. You know, I'm not going to stop that.
Well, if I did Queen, I would totally do Bicycle. For the beginning, because it's so absurd. But then if I, other than that, if I did have a walk-up song and it's not Queen, it would be Dare to Be Stupid by Weird Al. What about you?
I feel like we might have answered this question a couple of years back, but I'm going to re-answer it because we got the Queen angle now. My Queen song would be Flash, for sure. Nice. Got that like little beat up, you know, kind of warm you up, and then just announces that you're there. I think D Gordon should be considering this, right?
Is yeah.
Should and, I pitch this to him?
You should. It's just that I'm trying to think. Is that the one? Oh, yeah. Like in the middle of it. Okay, yeah.
Savior of the universe. Dum,
boom, boom, yeah, yeah. Boom. That's pretty good.
And then my walk-up song, if I had to pick one, is a 2003, I think, indie hit. But I've always just really liked it as a sort of pump-up song. It's Days of Being Wild, and the band name is And You'll Know Us by the Trail of Dead.
You okay?
Short band name. Believers in Brevity.
This is the point in the questions where you're going to have knowledge of stuff where I'm just going to be glossing over because I saw a few of the questions and there's going to be a lot of people disappointed in my lack of enthusiasm for the subject. This is fun for you because you get to find out in real time what those questions might be.
Yeah. I have an idea. As a reminder, you're a known bagel hater. You despise bagels, as we found out last week.
Despising might be strong, but let's just say on the scorecard, they came up with a bagel.
What about Game of Thrones? Where's that on the old chart?
I can't say I like or dislike it, mostly because I have not seen a single minute of it, nor have I read a single page of it.
Do you involve yourself in culture? Do you do things other than baseball? Or did it like once spring, you know, other than Springsteen, you just stopped?
I made a point a little over a year ago to reintroduce myself to go to movies in the theaters because I really love doing that. So I've been up on, you know, seeing a lot of the movies that are out. But TV wise,
in which you've seen a Rocky movie and a Star Wars movie.
How dare you? But you really realize I go I'll go to see like two or three at a time, or not at a time. It's in one day. So I bought, during those times, like when I saw Rocky, I saw four movies in the theater that day, including like Joy and Sisters. And I see the new ones.
That's impressive. Well, I guess I'll answer this question.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you what I know of Game of Thrones. Based on what I've seen people talk about, it's basically like the most awesomely graphic show on television, and that there's a lot of sex, there's a lot of nudity, and there's a lot of murder. Yep. And that's all I know.
That's about right. And why aren't you watching it?
Yeah, well, it, correct me if I'm wrong, but was it not an HBO show?
It is an HBO show.
So probably the timing of it, like, I had HBO for a little while, but then kind of went away. A couple years ago, I binge watched The Wire, like, I was way late to The Wire. But once I started, I think I finished, like, all 60 episodes in under, like, 2 weeks, so... That was pretty awesome, but yeah, it's just something I didn't really, haven't really taken the time or had the opportunity to. So it's been off my radar.
Well, Mayor Carchetti from The Wire is in Game of Thrones, and he's actually gonna be, I think, my answer to this question. Game of Thrones character would you choose of the Dodgers manager? And I'm gonna pick Littlefinger. He's conniving and evil, but he seems to be the most successful in getting what he wants, and all I really care about is winning. So
Littlefinger is like sort of harkens back to when old school baseball nicknames too. So I without knowing anything about him, I approve of that.
He's a not nice person, but nice. I bet he would at least get us one ring. We'll take it.
Littlefinger.
All right, next, to trade off, here's a question entirely for you. I'm going to check out on this one. As an old-time Dodger fan, I have a question about the Reggie Jackson putting his hip in the way of preventing a double play in the 1978 World Series. My question is about the line drive to Bill Russell. Do you think that Russell dropped the ball on purpose to get the double play? Also, if that play had happened in last year's World Series, I wonder what replay would have said about the Jackson play. And that is from Sid Golden.
So, yeah, first of all, the play in question, Reggie Jackson's on first. It was a line drive at Bill Russell, soft liner. He clearly dropped it on purpose. Like, it was like pretty obvious, blatant, like on purpose drop. And I guess it really sort of depends on the umpire on that. Like, probably supposed to call that an out, like, right away. But he was clearly thinking I can get two because he stepped on second and then threw to first. And Reggie Jackson, being the dirty cheater that he is, stuck his hip out and the throw hit his hip, bounced away, and then caused all chaos to break loose. And the Dodgers went, they lost that game and they went on to lose the series. There's no question that Bill Russell did that on purpose to try to get a double play. But if that's the kind of play that would, like, Twitter would explode, absolutely explode if that happened in real time. And then there'd be like a conference after the game because so many people were talking about it. And that, like, the umpire chief or Joe Torre would basically be in the conference room after the game talking about it. And then they'd talk about it the next day. And then Reggie Jackson would say probably the same stuff he did then. Like, you know, I was just trying to, you know, whatever, like, just playing it off. And everyone would have been mad. And then, it would have been completely blown out of proportion, I think. But that play is crazy. That, like, from the 70s, not involving the Dodgers, but there's like the Ed Armbrister play in the, what is it, the 73 World Series? I forget. The 72. I think it was Reds A's. And, Eddie Armbrister was Reds Red Sox, 75. There was like a bunt in front of home plate, and like, question of whether it was catcher's interference or not. And it was just hotly contested. Twitter would melt down if something like that happened today. So it'd be kind of, and it's interesting though because it was very in the moment. And so that's it. Like, I was only two when that happened, so I only have like a retroactive amount of rage for that. But like, had that happened, if I, like, say, like 1985 or something, when I was full, like, basically my first full year of watching, and I was fully invested in that team, and then something like that happened to, like, me as a 9-year-old fan, I would have been, like, yeah, I probably would not have forgotten about it to this day. So, yeah, it's crazy.
And finally, we have some... Craig, questions from our friend Craig Manami. He asks, pretzels, thin sticks or Wetzel style?
Wetzel style just meaning the...
I assume so. Yeah, just normal just, pretzel shaped.
Okay. I vacillate, but almost always, no matter which kind I get, I just want the thinnest ones possible. So I'll go.
So back are we talking forth. Like bag of pretzels or soft pretzel?
Bag of pretzels is what okay. I mean. So I do okay. I do like a soft pretzel, and in that case, I mean, you're kidding yourself if you don't get the twisty one. But but if it's a bag of pretzels, for me, it's just a matter of how thin is the rod or the twist. And I would get the as thin as possible. So that's pretty much what I'm looking for there.
Yeah, no, I like that. The thin twists, I think, is the terminology of ones I get for the bag. And then you got to do just normal twisty ones for a soft pretzel. There's just some joy in tearing it off.
Yes, for sure.
Are you just a mustard guy, or do you like an additional dipping sauce?
So this was weird. I was going to say, I assume you're talking about the soft pretzel, but so for the soft pretzel, mustard definitely works. So I was assuming that you were first talking about for soft pretzel dipping, which I believe to be the case, which of course mustard works for that. But also Buffalo Wild Wings, I think their soft pretzel comes with, or you can get it with a cheese sauce, and I found that to be pretty good. But it's one of those, like, you know, with any sort of cheese sauce, it's basically, as long as cheese sauce is molten hot, and once it gets 1 degree cooler than molten hot, you basically have liquid crap in there. So you're sort of fighting a game there. It's a timed affair. But yeah, mustard is the standard pretzel fare. But even bringing that back to the bag pretzels. My brother Kelly sort of introduced me to this. This is probably more than a decade ago. But every once in a while, we'll get together for football games, and part of the sort of party tray snack fixins or whatever would be just a bowl of pretzels and then mustard to dip it in, which is pretty good. And obviously, especially I think with the thin ones, for me, it's a matter of, like, I don't like biting into the thick.
No, completely breaded. Agree.
Yeah. So, but yeah, mustard on any of those is great.
Yeah. For the bag of pretzels, French onion dip. For soft pretzels, mustard and cheese. But cheese, well, that hopefully I'm not fighting against the clock on. That would be preferred.
French onion dip is solid. Like, and it's underrated. You know, the more popular one is always seems to be the quote unquote sour cream and onion dip. But the French onion dip is like, it's a bit more like tangier flavor, and it's just
delicious.
I've never done a pretzel with that though. So that's interesting, but
gotta give it a go.
Yep. I'm going to have to add that to the list, as we say.
Name the next position that gets signed to either a non-roster invitee or MLB contract by the Dodgers.
Okay, so we're recording this on a Tuesday, and assuming we're counting the Yaisel Sierra deal as already done, and the Joe Blanton deal has been official. So the next position,
I'm going to go back to back another reliever.
Whoa, okay, I like that. I like where your head's at there. I will say, I guess, do I have to specify, like, I just want to say infielder.
No, you got to specify. Okay, I mean, I'll say utility guy. That'd be fine.
I'm thinking utility guy, but I'll say specifically, like, someone who has a proclivity to play third base. I think that's who they sort of bring on next.
Craig's last question, hoodies or zipped up sweatshirt jackets? See, I have strong opinions on this now that I moved.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, coming from me, like I don't wear jackets a lot. I like both. In college, I went through a phase where I had a lot of hooded sweatshirts. You know, the old, as they say, the college style sweatshirt with the like some sort of logo across the front, the hand warming pouch in the middle,
right,
and then the hood. I do enjoy those, but I kind of like nowadays the lighter fare of the zipped up version of that. So I'll go with the zipper hoodie.
So I slightly prefer, if this is fall, I like the zipper. The pockets work better to put your hands in. Just looks stylish, more stylish, I think. But if you're, you know, Doreen's, you're maybe in your PJs or you're just PJ pants, the zipper one, and if it's, you know, 0 degrees out, zipper's cold. So I've come back around to the unzipped one.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. See, but for your purposes, like, it actually, it serves a purpose, whereas here it's more like it's almost a fashion accessory more than a functional item. So, like, it's more like, oh, it's chilly out. I need to put on long sleeves. So that's how we sort of decide. As I'm saying this, it rained a little today in the towny suburb of Covina. But yeah, so like I do like the zipper hoodie mostly because I don't like to wear the heavy stuff unless it's super cold out. But like you say, you live in that weather, so you need it. Like I don't own a parka, and like I haven't really needed one. So like, but I don't even have like a heavy coat for that matter. I don't know, maybe I'm an adult. I should own one, but just really, we live in Southern California. I don't really need it. So I don't concern myself with such things.
And got one more question that came while we were recording.
Uh-oh.
Total number of starters used this season. And will the bullpen pitch more innings than last season?
Okay. So I looked it up while you were before we started, because I think that came to the last second. I will say the Dodgers will use 12 starting pitchers this year. Okay. They used 16, I think, last year. And the bullpen will pitch fewer innings than 2015. So I looked this up, and the Dodgers average as a team just over 6 innings a start. Obviously, Greinke and Kershaw at the top. But then I looked at it a little deeper. The group with if you just exclude Kershaw from the starters, so basically what everyone else has to sort of pick up the slack for this year, because it's not just replacing Greinke. They're also, quote-unquote, replacing the Bolsinger-Frias starts, which might also come from Bolsinger and Frias at some point. They got nothing out of Ryu. So it's these kind of things you look at. But the non-Kershaw starters last year put up a 370 ERA in 5.81 innings per start. So that's sort of the real number they have to replace. Not saying you can – it always sounds ridiculous to say, oh, yeah, we'll just count on.
So about 4 times so far, I think, while we've been recording this, we've had some technical issues.
A little technical snafu here and there.
I think we basically answered that question.
Yeah. I agree.
I'm going to go a little more than you. I'm going to say you said 12. I'm going to say 13 starters. And you said that the bullpen would pitch less. I'm saying more. I think it's going to be a more reliable bullpen, and they'll pitch more from
it. Now, the one sort of cheating aspect I'm using is that also, if the Dodgers played fewer extra inning games, that will be fewer innings on the bullpen. So there could be technically the starters averaging fewer innings and the bullpen averaging fewer innings, but the total will be less because they're actually pitching fewer innings. So that'd be kind of a weird thing. But and then again, they also probably won't go 55-26 at home again. So they might – oh, no, that's the same amount of innings. So never mind, I'm dumb. Don't listen to me anymore.
So we'll wrap this up now so we don't get my horrible computer yelling at us again. We'll be back next week. Probably have possibly have even less news to talk about, but maybe we'll do an extra big mailbag episode.
Until we know where Shane Victorino is signing, we can't assume that news is just not going to happen out of nowhere.
That's true. So
I think, we're ready for anything, and whatever happens. So, you know, again, thanks everyone for questions. You don't have to wait for us to remind you to send them in. You can send them anytime. We'll keep track of them. Either tweet us at TrueBlueLA or Jacob Birch. G. you're an OG, so JACOBBRCH. Or you can email us at TBLApodcast@gmail.com. Send us any questions, you know, baseball or otherwise, any time of the week. We will keep track of them. And until next week, we will see you then.